Blog Talk Radio.
Once again to another episode of Is This the Church? And I am your host, Sister AJ. And we have a great show planned again for you this week. And we're continuing our exploration of AI, and could this possibly be the image of the beast? That's a question that we're exploring here because of all the technological discoveries and all the things that are coming out. In my opinion, it appears to be the convergence of all these different technologies. Everything is just growing exponentially. It's like progressing exponentially. It's like, you know, what might have taken 10 years to develop before, now that time might be cut in half at a minimum. Everything is progressing very quickly. And when I first began to think of this show, one of the scriptures that came to mind, of course, as we've been saying, is Daniel 12:4, where it talks about how many will go here and there to increase knowledge, and I know how the devil likes to try to set himself up as like to be like the Most High, just like spiritually we increase in knowledge as we study prophecies and learn and grow and understand things better with the help of the Holy Spirit. I believe that the devil tries to do that as well with his people, to increase knowledge, to come up with this technology that it appears is being set in place to be used at some point in the future by the Antichrist and the beast system. A lot of what we're seeing is the infrastructure being put in place. Because, of course, we know the devil is not equivalent to God. He is not like the Most High, but he can give the illusion that he is through this technology. And another scripture we've been using as our foundational text for this study is Revelation 13:11-18, where it talks about the second beast that comes out of the earth. I'll go ahead and read that. Then I saw a second beast coming out of the earth. It had two horns like a lamb, but it spoke like a dragon. It exercised all the authority of the first beast on its behalf and made the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast, whose fatal wound had been healed, and it performed great signs, even causing fire to come down from heaven to the earth in full view of the people. Because of the signs, it was given power to perform on behalf of the first beast. It deceived the inhabitants of the earth. Remember, Jesus talked about the last days, and the deception was the first thing he mentioned. Take heed that no one deceive you. Continuing on, it ordered them to set up an image in honor of the beast who was wounded by the sword and yet lived. The second beast was given power to give breath to the image of the first beast so that the image could speak and cause all who refused to worship the image to be killed. It also forced all people, great and small, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their foreheads, so that they could not buy or sell unless they had the mark, which is the name of the beast or the number of its name. And so it seems that for the first time in history, we're watching, or we can see how that can be accomplished, how they can prohibit people who refuse to accept the mark of the beast to buy and sell. And the constant monitoring and surveillance that'll be going on at that time, we can see it in real time being put in place. So that's what we want to talk about here on the on this show, and this study that we began a couple of weeks ago. We're on part three of the study. So as I keep reiterating, the script has been flipped, it seems, and what was originally marketed and presented to us as things that make things easier and convenient will be used to enslave us. The servant is becoming the master, which I mean the technology. So we'll get started with the show this week. We've been talking about one of the first thing that caused me to start looking at this technology with a more critical eye is when Mark Zuckerberg, a couple of years ago, he's the CEO of Facebook, announced a new venture, which is to create the metaverse, which he saw as a next phase in the internet, a next phase in social media, which is an immersive type of technology that they're working on, where you live and interact with people mostly in a virtual reality environment. It's a virtual digital world that he's trying to create, that we can all work and play and spend as much time in there as possible. And we've talked about buying and selling. You can buy, quote-unquote, real estate in this metaverse that he's trying to set up. then you've got cryptocurrencies and blockchain. We've talked about how all those things, these different technologies are being merged into this one thing. The best way I can describe this metaverse is, I guess it's similar to the Matrix. And it's a big push to get this technology going. It's still in some very beginning stages with a lot of this technology, but that's the goal. And you interact in this world by way of your avatar, this digital you that they want you to be able to build, that will represent you and interact in this metaverse. A world that they're creating without God, by the way. God did not create this. It's being created and set up by people. But to what end? That's what I wonder. And the first thing we're going to talk about today is I've been seeing reports starting at least back as far as a year ago, where it's been saying that Meta, the company, is losing money and how the stock has been falling and up and down, even up until a few days ago I was seeing reports about it. So the first video we're going to listen to talks about that. Now, this video is from last year, but it gives us a good idea of exactly how bad these financial losses have been so far for Mark Zuckerberg and his commitment to set up this metaverse. So without further ado.
Where I cover anything in science, technology, business, or history, this is just going to be a quick one. As I've said many times before, Facebook, now Meta, is the company that everyone loves to hate. With that in mind, it's easy to see why the events of yesterday came with such great joy to a lot of people. Meta's market cap fell by 26% in one day, erasing $240 billion of value, 25% in one day. This was the biggest single-day market cap drop in history for a U.S. publicly traded company. Zuckerberg personally lost $29 billion in the collapse. So what caused it, and what does this signal for the company?
You are watching Cold Fusion TV.
So why did the stock fall so much? Well, simply put, the Facebook platform is losing popularity. Back in 2018, younger Americans and Europeans began to leave the platform in droves. Back then, that was still okay for Facebook's bottom line, because the developing market uptake was growing at a much faster rate than Western markets were leaving. In an earnings report yesterday, the company stated that, for the first time in its history, the Facebook social network platform was losing daily users overall. The Facebook platform's Indian, African, and Latin American markets are now bleeding users. The platform may have reached peak saturation. Young people in developing markets now go straight to TikTok. And in Western markets, Facebook is now seemingly a destination for old people and mothers groups. Everyone else mainly uses it for Messenger, groups, and events. The main Facebook wall, where most of the advertising takes place, isn't exactly why people log on anymore. Apple's move to make ad tracking more difficult has also hurt Facebook's bottom line. The Facebook business model is advertising driven after all. In short, Meta wasn't going to be making as much money from Facebook as they forecast. This news surprised the markets. And if you know anything about trading, markets absolutely hate surprises. And from there, we saw the biggest wipeout in history.
Will this truly be the future for Facebook?
Look, it's obviously a pivotal point for Facebook here, and the question is, what happens over the next few years? Does it recover, and is it able to pivot into a metaverse-first company? Is it able to compete with TikTok? Is it able to actually lean into video the way Mark Zuckerberg wants it to? Or does the stock languish for the next 15 years like we saw with Microsoft after 2000?
Now, it is rare when you find so many people getting the story so wrong going into a print. I mean, if you consider the 52 analysts on Wall Street who cover the stock, 42 of the 52 have either buys or market outperform ratings on the stock. That's how offside the street is on the story at this point in terms of this print and the guide, Tim.
Facebook losing popularity isn't the only reason for the fall. The whole Meta company is going through a lot of controversy. As we discussed in other Cold Fusion episodes, there's been major pressures on Meta from regulators and other government bodies after the harm that Instagram and Facebook causes to teens was exposed over and over again by various whistleblowers. To add to this, the Metaverse Ventures have already lost the company $8.3 billion, and yesterday it was revealed that the Oculus Quest headset had lost $3.3 billion in one quarter, despite revenues reaching $900 million. It's likely that investors would like to see some results from a venture into the Metaverse sooner rather than later. And it's not like there's no money to be made. Real estate sales in the Metaverse exceeded $500 million last year, and it's expected to double this year. To succeed here, Meta needs a big slice of the growing pie. In addition to this, growth and risk stocks may have had their time in the sun. Overall, the US economy isn't looking too great. The country just crossed $30 trillion in debt and may dip into recession, with the Atlanta Fed predicting GDP growth next quarter of 0.1%. Inflation is rising to record highs. 70% of GDP last quarter was companies simply hoarding stock inventory in fears of inflation. People are quitting their jobs en masse, and interest rates are rising. Many investors are asking themselves, does this seem like a great time to be putting my money in speculative tech stock plays? For now, the answer may still well be yes, but in a couple of years, investors may look elsewhere for safer returns. So, is this the end of Meta? Hardly.
Karen, I'll go to you first. Is down 22% warranted?
It seems a little overdone to me, but, you know, we talk about the three-day rule all the time, and certainly I think, you know, let this shake out.
Other Meta sub-brands like WhatsApp and Instagram are still adding users. Meta also plans to focus on their short video format, Reels, to bring in more users and generate revenue. This recent crash of Meta was most likely just a stock market overreaction, and the stock will probably bounce back in no time. But if the company keeps on missing earnings targets, things may play out differently. After all, just back in June of last year, Meta was worth $1 trillion, and now it's down 35%. But ultimately, it's way too early to tell what this could mean. So what do you guys think about this? Do you see this as just a blip in the road? Or do you think that this might be something bigger, a sign of things to come for Meta? I do think that this crash being the biggest single-day value loss in history might tell us something. Let me know your thoughts in the comment section below. If you want to...
Okay. And that this report of how much money they've been losing made me wonder a couple of things that I'll present here is if for the last year, because that's when this particular video came out, and as I begin to look at this report of losing money, it went back at least a year where people have been talking about this, and up until a few days ago, I was still seeing reports of losses for Meta, the company that is venturing into this metaverse to build this virtual world. But if it's hemorrhaging money like billions of dollars, why is Mark Zuckerberg pressing ahead with this when it does not seem to make good business sense? And we've been seeing this in other areas as well. You know, why would these major corporations whose main thing is to make money for their shareholders, why are they doing things that would cause them to lose money? You know, an example would be, I guess, Bud Light. How they are getting a polarizing, controversial figure such as Dylan Mulvaney to represent their product, and their sales tanked in a lot of areas. People refused to buy it, stores refused to stock it, and even if it was stocked, nobody was buying it. Why would businesses do that unless there's some other reason behind it? Because you would think that Mark Zuckerberg would shut this down if it's losing that much money. Perhaps these endeavors are in this research that they're doing to develop the software and hardware for the metaverse. Is it being financed by somebody else, a hidden benefactor that's subsidizing their losses? Whomever it is, they're not someone who is known outside of very tight circles. And if that's the case, what is their end? What are they trying to get? What are they going to get out of this? And that brings me to the next subject that we're going to get into with some a group that we've heard a lot about on different programs over the years. Sister Marie has talked about these guys in the past on her shows, and I'm talking about the World Economic Forum, and they have a whole section on just the metaverse on their web page, and so you can actually go out there and do a web search for WEF and the metaverse, and it'll take you to their page, and you'll be able to find some stuff on it. They've got extensive articles and videos of talking about it. And even in the last meeting they had in Davos, Switzerland, this year, they were talking about the metaverse, and we'll get into a few of those videos here in a second. But I'm just going to read one of the statements they put out about the metaverse on their webpage. The next version of the Internet may be a far more immersive virtual experience. The concept of the metaverse has received renewed attention through many of its basic elements like virtual and augmented reality or cryptocurrency transactions have been under construction for decades. By essentially making the Internet a virtual twin of the physical world, this digital do-over could enable novel ways of working, buying things, learning, and socializing. No single company will own or dominate the metaverse, and the race is on to stake out territory within it. So that was one article that I saw that I copied a little bit from so I could read it to you. And me personally, I'm always suspicious when I see these guys endorsing anything. So at the latest Davos meeting, they talked about the metaverse pretty extensively. They've been doing this for this is at least the second year in a row where the metaverse has been talked about and how they want to build it. But first we're going to listen to Klaus Schwab, who is the head of the World Economic Forum, WEF. We'll listen to him say a few words about this to open up the talks at Davos this past year, or earlier this year they had it.
And without further ado, Klaus, I'm going to hand over you to introduce the Global Collaboration Village.
Thank you, Adrian, and good morning. The Global Collaboration Village is a pioneering effort to use the metaverse for the public good, to create global cooperation and to strengthen global cooperation in the metaverse or using metaverse technologies. And we are pleased to create this Global Collaboration Village in cooperation with Accenture and with Microsoft, but behind there is now a consortium of village partners which comprises over 80 companies, international organizations such like the IMF, WTO, UNDP, also NGOs and academic institutions and the first countries. So the idea is to bring all the stakeholders, governments, business, civil society, together on a continued, sustained basis to supplement what we are doing here in Davos. But here in Davos, in the physical world, of course, we are restricted. In the virtual world, you have no limitations. So this will be an expansion. And hopefully not only an expansion, but it will increase substantially the impact of the dialogues which are going on under the roof of the World Economic Forum.
It's changing how we work, making it much easier, more efficient, and allowing us to collaborate in different ways. I believe, having done this myself, whether I'm bringing clients or onboarding employees, that the killer app is really the different ways to collaborate. But when you think about why to go to the metaverse, the World Economic Forum is really pioneering the fourth killer app, and that is for public purpose.
Thanks, Brad. Thanks to all of our panelists. Just to get a sense, are there questions from any?
All right, that's pretty much the video. And a couple things said there I wanted to point out. Anytime you hear these bureaucrats, the government or folks like this saying, we want to do this for the public good, run. Be suspicious. The public good, do you really think that these folks care about the public at all? So that's one thing that Klaus said, and I don't know about you, but he reminds me of the Emperor from Star Wars. He's just one creepy guy. And another thing that was said there at the end, Klaus has written material that calls what they're doing, of course, the Great Reset, but also the Fourth Industrial Revolution. And I thought it interesting that the lady that we heard speak there at the end called this metaverse like a killer app, the fourth killer app. So that's ominous as well. I just don't believe these people are pushing this because they care about us. There's got to be another reason behind it. And remember our theme and our scriptures about this beast system, this image of the beast. So we're going to look at a couple more videos from Davos and the World Economic Forum talking more about the metaverse. And this video is a relatively short video that talks about how the metaverse will change our lives.
We've all heard about it, but few of us can quite put our finger on what it is. For a number of years now, the metaverse has garnered increasing media attention, not least because it has become the strategic focal point of some of tech's biggest companies. By some estimates, the metaverse will give rise to a multi-trillion dollar virtual economy by 2030.
In 1999, there was about 1,000 headsets in existence. In 2021, in the United States, about 15 million headsets were sold, just in 2021. So we're on a trajectory here.
But between dire warnings about the virtual overriding what's real and the hype around the metaverse's revolutionary potential, it can be difficult to tell what this technology is really capable of.
In the metaverse, you can look in a virtual mirror and you can be older. You can have a different body shape. You can have different skin color. You can be a different gender. We use the metaverse for these intense experiences that solve hard problems.
Joining this episode.
And you notice one theme I've been hearing in a lot of these videos, and even Klaus said it there in his introduction, is that there's limits in the physical world, but in this virtual world, it's limitless. You can be anything you want to be. And here it is again. You can be anything that you want to be. Different gender, even a different species or some alien from outer space. You can build an avatar that best suits what you want to present to in the virtual world at that particular time, which it can change every time you go in there. You may have several avatars that you use to represent you in the digital world. That's something that I'm hearing all the time.
Of experts explain, to help make sense of it all is Stanford University's Jeremy Bailenson. He's been researching the metaverse and virtual reality for decades. He started Stanford's Virtual Human Interaction Lab and co-founded the VR-focused tech company, Striver.
The metaverse is a term a lot of us are hearing, but we can boil it down to a simple definition, which is people, places, and things. So there's a digital world, and in that world, there need to be people. If I'm going to enter the world, I need to have an avatar. So there's a lot of technology and a lot of communities that are building avatars so people can come together in an online world. The next thing is places. There's a virtual world where you have to go. And that virtual world has got to be two things, consistent and persistent. Consistent means if you go there and there's a grid and I bought a plot of land and it's next to another person, it's got to stay that way. The next thing it's got to be is persistent. Even if I leave, the world's got to still be there. The final part of the metaverse is things. You have to have 3D objects or 2D objects, just digital assets. So when we think of things in the metaverse, we often think of NFTs, non-fungible tokens. And these are 3D models or pictures that are digital that we can verify. Right now, that market is being driven mostly by collectors, people that just want to have the sword that killed the dragon in a particular video game or have the first tweet from Jack Dorsey. And so currently, there's a genre of people that are doing collecting there. And this is nothing new. There were plots of land that sold in Second Life 15 years ago for $1 million. So it's not a new thing, but it's a very niche thing.
So how will the metaverse evolve from this very niche thing to a huge virtual economy? A big part of the answer is virtual reality, or VR. Combined with the economic framework that allows people to interact with places and things in the metaverse, VR is already drawing in millions of consumers.
People always say, Jeremy, why hasn't VR taken off? And I say, when I started doing this work in 1999, there was about 1,000 headsets in existence. In 2021, in the United States, about 15 million headsets were sold, just in 2021. The goggles that now cost $300, 10 years ago, I was paying $40,000 for them, and they were nowhere near as good. So the hardware, in my opinion, is amazing. A headset is only one-third the price of a smartphone headset. So leverage sight, sound, and touch. So you get to turn your head and look around. You get to have spatialized sound. So if you're underwater and there's corals that are bubbling, you get to hear them in your left ear, and it gets louder when you move towards it. And we have haptic feedback. And our headsets now at Stanford, we've got scent generators. And one of our demos on climate change is that if you're using non-recycled paper, you have to cut down a tree with your own hands, and you get haptic feedback as that chainsaw cuts the tree. And then you get this gasoline smell as the chainsaw emits. It's multi-sensory. We're now doing four senses: sight, sound, touch, and smell. You can put on the goggles, and you can look in a virtual mirror, and you can be older. You can have a different body shape. You can have different skin color. You can be a different gender. And what you then do is you have an experience while wearing another person's body, and you get to walk a mile in that person's shoes. And we've worked with governments and companies and schools all around the world where we are building VR simulations to increase empathy and to do diversity training.
Even without a fully...
Wow. It's basically trying to make this a continuous environment that people could spend a lot of time in, it sounds, and be, as I was saying, of things other than what God made you. You can look different. You can be in another person's body. And that sounds a little back like some witchcraft things that I've heard that can be done through spells and sorcery and different things, but now it can be done through technology to force people to be able to empathize. But, you know, we're sinful, fallen creatures, and people who are unredeemed sinners, you know, a lot of times they can, the world is selfish and becoming more and more narcissistic as it goes along. The world, the Bible talks about how in the latter days men would become lovers of themselves even more. So, but it's interesting how they're trying to market this as a good thing. We can teach people empathy and all these other things through some of these metaverse experiences. It's as if they're trying to play God.
Realized metaverse, on-the-job training for things like empathy is one of the most widespread and promising applications of VR.
The reason we have VR is because of training. People learn by doing. You make mistakes, you get feedback, and then you repeat. And that's how all of us learn. The moment where VR goes mainstream in the United States is actually with Walmart. Over a million associates have now put on headsets, entered the metaverse, and trained to get better at their job. And we've got incredible data on return on investment, and they train more quickly, they train more effectively, and of course they enjoy the training because they're in virtual reality. The whole model of VR training is we do things that if you did them in the real world, it would be hard to do. And one example that's going to stand out is if I've got to give you a bad performance review, that's going to affect you. And if I can deliver that in a way that's more skillful, you're going to respond better. You put the goggles on, and you're sitting across from a person. And you get a prompt. You're working at a company, and you find out that this person, you know, has had some problems recently. They've been showing up late, and you get some information about things they've been doing wrong, and you talk to them in a simulation. That person then replies back to you and says, well, you know, there's a reason I was late, and you get that news, and then you iterate. And so that goes on for about 10 minutes where there's a really good conversation, and then you swap. So we've recorded all of your utterances, your audio, and your nonverbal behavior. So then you sit where the employee was sitting, and you then get to watch yourself delivering that news, and you relive the conversation from the employee's point of view. Then, after you get that hard feedback, which is watching yourself, you then go back and you repeat it. Great learning has you try something, make some mistakes, and then you do it again. With VR, it's on demand, and employees can just go and get a 10-minute training dose whenever they want.
Beyond just training, the metaverse and virtual reality also let people work remotely in ways that weren't previously possible.
Where the metaverse earns its keep is when you're doing collaborative tasks that are spatial, where if it's a small group, and it's important that when I look to the left and I point to someone, everyone else sees where I'm pointing. And if I walk up to you, you get a sense of my personal space, or if we're working on a shared object together, that the spatial aspect matters. And oftentimes when we think about being spatial, we think about vision. Is a person here? Is a person to the right? And looking at them. However, spatial, I found, it offers an incredible amount of value in terms of social interaction. Naturally, in a real world, if somebody whispers, their voice is lower. And if somebody shouts, their voice is louder. And when you're on a video conference, that doesn't necessarily happen. The same cues we use in the real world to understand people, we get to use them in the metaverse as well.
So given the enormous potential of this virtual world, how much time will we actually end up spending in the metaverse?
I've been studying the metaverse for 20 years. The metaverse is not going to change your life tomorrow. There was a moment where we thought all of us were going to be in the metaverse, meaning the media was promoting this as an everyday thing, and we're not going to have that for some years. It doesn't mean that the medium isn't being used. What we've learned about the metaverse is we're going to see slow and steady growth. It's going to be driven by use cases that make sense. The medium is great for these intense experiences that solve hard problems. However, for other things, a shared document will suffice. So a lot of things you don't need the metaverse for. The metaverse will creep in when it earns its keep, when there's something incredible to do there. Short of that, we should stay in the real world.
Okay, that's that video, and that was very interesting, and some of the language in they're using. And they're building up to this. They understand it right now. Particularly, many of us in the older generations will probably not be interested in this, but it's geared toward younger people who are already used to this type of thing. The video gaming world is a big piece to this, and that's one thing they're working toward, is making things more realistic for people who are into gaming, maybe even having some games and activities that they would be interested in playing in the metaverse. So that's what they're doing now with this. But as I said, young people are already used to dealing with technology and being groomed for it. So that's the thing to keep in mind. They probably don't expect some of us older folks to be interested, but maybe later on, more social engineering, more predictive programming, and maybe even some coercion. Because let's say, you know, you're working a job, and that job requires you to spend a certain amount of time every week in the metaverse, having meetings, doing training sessions and all that kind of stuff in the metaverse. you know, it's possible that it could be some coercion involved with getting people to use it more. Just something that I was thinking of. It could become a more mandatory thing as time goes on, because we've seen that in real time, in the real world, especially the last few years, things that were typically you were left to your own judgment and choices that you wanted to make, to all of a sudden you have no choice. So just the thought. The next video, because there's been some things about crime, so to speak, in the metaverse, where a person says she was sexually harassed while she was spending time in one of the social areas in the metaverse, and there's been some other concerns about governance. So in this next video we're going to listen to, there's some talk about governance in the metaverse and some other things that they're looking at the World Economic Forum, and it says how to build a metaverse for all. And some of the things they're going to talk about is making it inclusive. There's that word, equitable. So making the metaverse available to everyone, even people who could be denied access right now, but they want to make it available. Well, why is that, especially with this crowd?
Hello and welcome to our press briefing on how to build a metaverse for all. I'm Kirsten Salyer from the World Economic Forum, and I'm joined here today by a stellar panel of speakers. We have Kathy Lee, head of Shaping the Future of Media, Entertainment, and Sport at the World Economic Forum; Huda Al-Hashimi, Deputy Minister of Cabinet Affairs for Strategic Affairs, the Office of the Prime Minister of the United Arab Emirates; and Yatsia, co-founder and executive chairman at Animoca Brands. Thank you all for being here with us today. So the metaverse has been a big buzzword here in Davos this week, and we're here today to speak about what exactly it means and how we can ensure that it is inclusive. So why does this matter? The metaverse is actually on track, according to some estimates, to be an $800 billion market by 2024. So we're just looking 1 year ahead. And that will have serious implications for business as well as for consumers who are looking to navigate what this means for their work and for their lives. It also raises some serious questions about how we ensure these technologies are accessible, inclusive, and safe. So that's the focus of the World Economic Forum's Defining and Building the Metaverse initiative. This is an initiative that is made up of more than 150 members who are working on answering these tough questions. And there's two new papers released today, one on interoperability in the metaverse and another on demystifying that consumer metaverse experience. So Kathy, could you tell us a bit about why this research is so important and what these initial findings mean for the metaverse?
Thanks, Kirsten, for that. Hello, everyone. Kathy Lee, head of Media, Entertainment, and Sport Platform at the Forum. So the metaverse, it's been a buzzword. It's an evolving concept, one that doesn't have a standard definition yet. But many would agree that this new age of the internet will likely to disrupt but also transform the current social and also economic structures, from more immersive, empathetic social experiences to more universal access to education and healthcare. The metaverse does bring us a lot of the new opportunities, but at the same time, tremendous challenges as well. So because of all of this, interest in from business and also public, the forum felt the time was right to start this initiative and really bring together the key stakeholders, public sector, private sector, civil society, academia, to come together and contribute to developing a future metaverse that is safe, inclusive, interoperable, equitable, but also economically viable. And that's why we launched the Defining and Building the Metaverse Initiative at our last annual meeting in May. As the leading international organization for public-private partnerships, the forum is uniquely positioned to bring together this diverse set of stakeholders. The work focused on two key areas. One is metaverse governance, and the other one is economic and societal value creation. Of the two tracks, the governance track focuses on defining a set of governance frameworks that recommend a framework that prevents potential harms and also mitigate emerging risks while ensuring equity and interoperability. The value creation track focuses on providing systems guidance to prepare for the organizations to prepare for the inevitability of disruption and also be aware of the potential value that the metaverse can generate. Since the launch, the initiative has convened more than 150 partners and organizations, including my two co-panelists here who are on the steering committee of the initiative, together with the two working groups exploring the themes across both tracks. On governance, the main themes that's being explored are privacy, security, interoperability, safety, and identity. The value creation track started with exploration of the consumer-facing metaverse and will develop to cover industrial and enterprise metaverse over the time. And in the meantime, it will also research the opportunities and trade-offs in access, inclusion, sustainability, and well-being for those who seek to use the metaverse. Through months of intense research, countless of working group meetings and steering committee meetings, and the interviews with constituents from all sectors, both sectors are now ready to release their first outputs. The first output of the value creation track is on is the insight report demystifying the consumer metaverse and explores key components, foundational technologies, roles and paths to economic value and growth in the singular consumer metaverse. The governance track is launching interoperability, a briefing paper called Interoperability in the Metaverse. For the metaverse to operate seamlessly, it will need to require a certain degree of interoperability for user to move, transact, participate across different platforms and localities.
So as you heard her state there, that they're trying to make this thing a seamless world where you can move about in the metaverse the same as you would in the real world. Not saying you could live in there per se, but you would spend a lot of your time in there because it's just like the real world, to include their developing things to make to stimulate the senses more in this world. So this is what they've been discussing behind the scenes in these meetings that they have with companies and big tech companies, world leaders. All these people are getting together to decide how this thing is going to operate. And I don't remember seeing any of this on any type of voting ballot. How about you all? Did you vote for this?
The two tracks collaborate closely with each other to make sure that the value creation in the metaverse is considered within a well-established governance framework, while the governance recommendations remain cognizant of the economic and also social opportunities. And lastly, I just wanted to mention that although, again, metaverse presents such significant challenges, it could also be used for immense good, and especially when driven by purposeful and ethical public-private partnerships.
Thank you, Kathy. I think that oftentimes interplay between opportunities and the challenges is really interesting, and I'm hoping, Huda, you can elaborate a bit on that in terms of actually looking at exciting developments in regulation to address some of these challenges. what are these exciting developments in the regulatory sphere that will be unique to the metaverse, and what do you think the most pressing issues are?
So first of all, I'm super proud to be part of this steering committee. It's been a wonderful journey, a journey that we're constantly debating and learning from each other. And I think the mix of government and private sector and providers and creators is really bringing this collaborative spirit of something that I guess we all acknowledge is an unknown, and it's constantly evolving. In the UAE context, you need to ask why we are part of this. Really, we are actively exploring the potential of the metaverse, both from a regulatory aspect, but also from a value aspect as well. And that's why the two papers really sort of bring to fruit that there is a tremendous economic and societal value on this, but if it is unregulated, then there might be some issues with privacy, safety, and security as well. So it goes very hand in hand. We've recently announced our metaverse strategy. We've also recently announced our blockchain strategy, and we've hosted an assembly. So we're quite active in this domain. So there's a lot of exciting things that are happening in the regulatory front. And you might understand regulation and excitement don't go hand in hand, but I think in our world it does. We see that there might be an exponential increase in innovation and new business models, as well as connecting across borders when it comes to the metaverse, especially when it comes to virtual boundaries. We'll be talking about things like cross-border exchanges. So these are things that are quite exciting for expanding markets as well. We want to stop focusing on reproducing physical spaces in the metaverse. I mean, what's the value of having a government office in the metaverse and ask yourself that you want to climb the stairs to that office in the metaverse? We have to ask ourselves, why are we still stuck in that domain? So we want to break through, and we believe that the exciting things that breakthrough will happen. We also see that regulators will be acting more like referees rather than gatekeepers, and that code of conduct will actually take precedence over formulating policies. So these are areas that we believe are exciting. If I could just maybe summarize it into four main aspects, and I think you mentioned that ethical and responsible participation, that's at the core of what we're trying to do, size neutral but also tech agnostic. The second one we believe is fostering passporting, and this is when we talk about global interoperability and the amount of scalability will happen when we actually do support regulations and standards in that sphere. And the third one is on democratizing adoption, and this is about ease of access, acceptance, affordability, safety at its core. And this is something that we want to be quite sure, and the technology is actually expanding. We see that they're really exploring, and unless that happens, it will be just for a few, and that's not what we're looking for. We do want it to be equitable. And I think the fourth one is supporting innovation regulatory sandboxes, and we want to move away from just talking about generic frameworks and talking and beyond declarations. We want to actually test these in real life, and the only way we can do that is through having safe regulatory bodies, sandboxing, and we're all familiar with that terminology, but what does that mean in the metaverse? And that's, I think, is going to be exciting time for us going forward.
Thank you, Huda. I think regulators like referees is a kind of a nice framework to keep in mind as we think through kind of what these challenges might be in a constantly evolving playing field, to extend your metaphor.
I was just thinking, I mean, they're wanting to expand this and make it safe and equitable and accessible and all these types of things, making sure your identity is safe. Like I would trust these folks to make me safe. I don't even trust them in the real world. But I'm wondering how many of these elites in particular would even spend that much time in this virtual world, or are they building it more for the rest of us than for them? You know, while we're in the metaverse, I suppose they can just be enjoying the real world because they don't have a whole bunch of us to worry about being in these places they like to go and making them crowded and all that kind of thing. So I'm just thinking, will Klaus Schwab actually use the metaverse all that much? Just asking.
Okay,
talking about scale here. You know, how do we go from where we are today to where we're going to be in 1 year, in 5 years' time? So this is where interoperability, I think, becomes increasingly important, as Kathy, as you mentioned. How does this exactly help with that value creation? And what does ownership look like in this digital world of the metaverse?
So thank you. It's a great honor to be here. I think the important question we have to ask ourselves is the time that we spend online right now, we create data. And that data creates value for, but for who is the question. And it creates value for the platforms. And the challenge is that actually when you talk about data portability, what data are you basically porting from one to another? It's permission for the time being. And that means value creation in the current format can actually really truly exist to accruing to the end user because they don't own that data or the derivative of the data. Because after all, we can ask ourselves the question, you know, if we weren't driving Tesla cars, would Tesla actually have the ability to become a self-driving car? The value actually came from the people who are driving it. And that is true for name your platform, basically data paradigm. So what, you know, and so the challenge that, you know, we're still debating and discussing is around this interoperability. Interoperability only means something, we think, if you have ownership. But what does ownership of your data look like? It's not just your photos. It has to be the derivative of that data, what the value of that data generated, right? And so when you then are able to move it, imagine just from a paradigm of, let's say, games, which is another way where, you know, 3.4 billion people are playing games today. All of those digital items that they have inside those games, $200 billion of value generated last year alone. Actually, none of the players own any of those assets. They don't own that. But where this business will grow is when there's interoperability, if you actually own it, you would have then the freedom to take your assets from one game to another or maybe create new gaming experiences for those who want to create a new game based on someone else's ownership, as we do in the physical world. But that means we have to sort of wrestle around this topic of true digital ownership, and maybe digital property rights is one area. Is the answer Web3? Do we use blockchain as a way to validate basically this ownership? Is it regulation? These are all things, obviously, that we're trying to come to terms with. But I think at the foundation, if you don't have true digital property rights, then you can't actually have digital freedom, the freedom to transact, because it's always permissioned. So I think that lies at the foundation of making interoperability benefit everyone.
Thank you. Something that seems like it's coming across in a lot of the comments here today is really the individual at the heart of the center of how we're thinking about defining what is a very technical and a very digital virtual space. Putting people at the heart of design, Kathy, that's something that the initiative is sort of working towards developing. Could you speak a little bit more about what that means, and especially around issues of accessibility? How are people actually going to be using that space, and how do we make sure that that really is an inclusive environment as much as it can be?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. So when we think about, first of all, when we think about the metaverse, we don't think about the metaverse necessarily as the end state. It's just ongoing digital transformation. And what that means is everything we're doing now needs to be translated properly into, you know, the future of the internet. And we've been saying for years that human rights should be respected and translated into the digital context. That means that the rights that you enjoy offline and the rights to privacy, to security that you have offline should be translated into online world as well.
So thinking of our lives right now when they're talking about human rights and rights being respected and freedoms, do we even have that in the physical, in the real world, in a way that we used to? Do we even have rights to privacy anymore in the real world? So what? Why should I think that we'll have it all of a sudden in the metaverse, that these folks are going to be able to govern it in such a way where everybody's rights are respected when they don't do that here? Because man is still sinful, he's still corrupt, we still have this fallen nature. So why would it be different? Why would we suddenly have ethics in the metaverse? You know, just things I'm thinking about as I've listened to them talk about this stuff. And we'll listen to a little bit more of this video, and then we'll move on to something else.
And that's why we keep preaching that the future of the Internet, therefore the metaverse, needs to be human first, because human needs to remain at the center of the design. And that comes with, you know, many different realms. For example, privacy, security, and safety, when we think about a lot of the issues related to the design of the Internet and many of the pitfalls we actually didn't foresee when the Internet, you know, was born 40 years ago, we now need to carefully think about how can we safeguard the future of the Internet. Accessibility is one thing that's extremely important. We're talking about accessibility not only in terms of disability, but we're also talking about, you know, people who have different eyesights, different, you know, preferences. They may, we need to think about when it comes to design of the headsets, we need to consider all of those requirements, and also demographic and also geographic divide as well. We need to make sure that this doesn't create another opportunity, another chance for the further digital divide to occur. So all of those need to be thought through, and that's why, for example, the interoperability paper focuses on looking at interoperability not only from the technical perspective but usage across different demographic and geographic and also jurisdictional interoperability.
Okay, we'll leave this here, but just wanted you to hear a little bit about some of these plans that they have concerning the metaverse and what they want to do with it. So next we're going to move into some things about new technology, some of the latest things that they're coming up with, whether it be software or equipment to make the metaverse more appealing for people to want to spend time in. And so the first video we're going to look at is talking a little bit about some of these things that they've come up with here recently.
Talk with them face to face, only this time you're doing so in a different universe, a metaverse. Mark Zuckerberg is on to something with AI, something that could change how humans communicate forever. But that's not all. There's also a new buzzing project of AI translators like the world has never seen before. Join us in this video as we cover the latest AI breakthroughs of Mark Zuckerberg and Lex Fridman. AI technology has been undergoing rapid development right before our eyes, and there's a lot more still to come. Although names like OpenAI and NVIDIA seem to be leading the pack, one company that is very much overlooked is Mark Zuckerberg's Meta. Now, in case you don't know, Meta was originally Facebook, but then Mark Zuckerberg changed the company name to Meta due to his obsession with creating one particular thing, the metaverse. In short, this one project has been the driving force of Zuckerberg for so long, and it's why you don't hear too many AI software releases from the Meta brand. Why create several small AI tools when you can create one mega AI model that would become the next big thing? Truly, metaverse is the next big thing, and the recent interview conducted by Lex Fridman proves just that. In a recent interview, Lex Fridman and Mark Zuckerberg were out on their metaverse headsets. Despite the fact that they were in two different states miles apart, the two men were able to conduct the interview sitting right next to each other in the metaverse. Now, this is the next level virtual reality because, as Fridman mentioned in the interview, he could feel Zuckerberg's presence as though he was right there with him. So, how did they achieve this? Well, before we dive into all that, if you've enjoyed this video so far, take this moment to hit the like button and subscribe to our channel. It's your own way of supporting us to make more videos like this. Thank you. Now let's get back to our video. Mark explained that the metaverse headsets use something called codec avatars. These avatars are not animations or videos like what you find with most AI models. Rather, these avatars are like a meta version of your entire self. From your face to your body and facial expressions, every piece of information is collected and collapsed into a codec. As you put on the headset, it assembles all the data about you and sends the encoded version of you via the wires. Now, I'm sure you're wondering if this AI has been launched. According to Mark Zuckerberg, it's still pretty much in its development phase. You see, as of the time of this interview, this AI was taking quite a long time to scan. You see, collecting your personal information and all that comes at a price, you must get scanned for the data to come out. However, as Mark Zuckerberg...
what they're meaning by scanning, and we'll get into that a little bit more as we go on here, as we take a look at that interview that was done in the metaverse. But they're talking about doing body scans of you, your face, numerous facial expressions that you have, all these features that make up who you are in the real world. They scan you extensively to be able to put that into something that looks realistic in the metaverse, because we stated last week, I believe it was, how they're working on making these avatars look a lot less cartoonish and more realistic.
Field, one has to sit for hours for this AI to complete its scan. However, Mark Zuckerberg has revealed future plans for the model that would make it quite astonishing. According to him, a time would come when users could just wave their phones across their faces or sit still for a few minutes, and the scan would be completed. This would make the metaverse super quick and easy to use. He also mentioned the possibility of adding more stuff to the Meta environment. In the video, Lex Fridman and Mark Zuckerberg were in a dark metaverse room. Now imagine they could make that environment more lively and engaging, so much so that you could play games, walk around, and do all sorts of things inside the metaverse in a realistic way. This is Mark Zuckerberg's dream for the metaverse. One day, it'd be so advanced that someone in the metaverse could converse with someone in the physical realm by superimposing his codec avatar onto real-life locations. Zuckerberg mentioned integrating metaverse into every one of its apps, like Facebook and WhatsApp. And here's where things get crazy. Soon, Meta will enable users to create AI tools or AI versions of themselves in the metaverse. Imagine having an AI avatar of yourself in the metaverse that your WhatsApp or Facebook contacts can reach out to at any time for chatting or business consultation. That's all going to be possible soon. Mark revealed that they're already experimenting with this, and he believes it will be very powerful when it is achieved. In his own words, he said, "I don't think we necessarily want there to be, like, one big super intelligence. We want to empower everyone to both, you know, have more fun and accomplish their business goals." But besides this metaverse, Mark Zuckerberg also announced something similar and exciting, the Quest 3. Quest 3 is a mixed reality AI model. You know how virtual reality works, right? Where you're sucked up into a virtual world with no sense of where you are in the real world, except you take off the headsets. Well, Quest 3 will offer a mixed reality, meaning you can still be conscious of the real world, even while doing your thing in virtual reality. Meta achieved this feat by installing cameras on the outside of the Quest 3 headsets, allowing users to see what's happening in the real world as well as in the virtual world. This mixed reality would prevent issues like toppling over furniture while playing virtual reality games or running into walls and other dangerous stuff around you. You'd be able to see your physical environment just as much as the virtual world. One area where Mark Zuckerberg aims to make massive AI projects around is language translators. As you should know, over 3 billion people use WhatsApp, Facebook, and Instagram. Zuckerberg revealed during a podcast with Lex Fridman that language translation AI models are a thing of the future, as they'll help anyone easily express themselves to anyone online, regardless of language barriers. But there's another idea, the kind of Mark Zuckerberg right now, to take AI translators to the next level. You see, the language barrier is something that we experience online and offline. And so, imagine you had something that could automatically translate any language you hear in real life into your local dialect. Now, we're not talking about an app here. Rather, something more hands-on.
people have no clue.
Be an earbud, glasses, or a helmet that autonomously translates all languages in real time. Mark Zuckerberg discussed this intensively during a recent podcast with Lex Fridman. And just so you know, the billionaire CEO isn't sleeping on this. In fact, just in August 2023, Zuckerberg launched a revolutionary AI translator capable of translating and transcribing speech in dozens of languages. This translator is called the Seamless M4T model. Now, I'm sure you're wondering what makes this translator any different from the numerous AI translators out there. Well, there are two major reasons. For starters, this model offers real-time translation, that is, speech-to-speech translation. And then secondly, it also offers text-to-speech translation as well as transcription. So, you see, this model is a combination of other models out there. It's rare to find an AI transcriber that also doubles as a real-time speech translator. For now, the model offers speech-to-speech translation in 35 languages. More will be added in future. This model will be pivotal to Mark Zuckerberg's dream invention, a portable physical device that can translate any language in real time for users to understand. Although many AI translators exist today, current AI models have several challenges with language translation. From accuracy to understanding context and nuances, several gaps exist that need to be filled. Moreover, most translators are still text-based. Meta is going a step further to make actual translators that translate real-life speech in real time. As you well know, large language models like this new AI translator tool must necessarily be trained. Meta revealed that the audio training data for their Seamless M4T model was obtained from the web, and they also collected text data from websites like Wikipedia, as well as outside sources. Given that this model is still in its early stages, it has a lot of potential. By the time it begins translating over 200 languages worldwide, it may become another trending software like WhatsApp and Facebook. Mark Zuckerberg has revealed that this model would be a very crucial tool in the future metaverse. Remember, we talked about how you would one day be able to create an AI version of yourself to be available 24/7 on the metaverse. With a translator like this, no one anywhere in the world would have trouble communicating with you in the metaverse. You could literally speak English to a native Frenchman, and he would understand perfectly, thanks to instant, real-time translation. Now, wouldn't that be awesome? Currently, the Seamless M4T model is available for public use, and it's free. It's part of Mark Zuckerberg's undying desire to revolutionize technology with AI. Recently, especially in 2023, Meta has been launching mostly free AI models. For instance, they launched an incredible open-source large language model called Llama that allows users to develop any AI tool they like on the platform. This is something most companies like OpenAI would never give for free. And yet Meta didn't just make it free, but also made it open source, meaning anyone can have access to the framework or basic coding of this model and contribute to its evolution. At the end of the day, the billionaire CEO isn't just interested in cementing his legacy in the evolution of AI, but also wants to make AI accessible and enjoyable to all. Remember to subscribe to our channel.
Okay. The one thing I wanted to bring up that was stated in this video with talking about the translators, when I heard this, the real-time speech translators, I immediately thought of could this be like a counterfeit of the work of the Holy Spirit on the day of Pentecost in Acts 2, 1 through 6, where the people who heard them speaking in tongues, when the Holy Spirit came upon them, they could hear it in real time in their own dialect, their own language, because there were people from all over that were celebrating Pentecost at that time. So remember, Satan always wants to be like the Most High. And with his technology, it's ways that he can mimic it, you know, be able to speak to people in their own language in real time because of these translators. And, of course, most of this stuff is in the early stages of development, and they release these products to the public, like it was hinting at in this video of Mark Zuckerberg putting these things out there, and they do it to test it so that this technology can learn us, learn the nuances of language in the case of these translators, and try to mimic it and adapt as best that it can. And at least that's what they're hoping for. And, of course, there'll always be flaws due to the nuances in languages and dialects and idioms and all the things that make up our language that it may get wrong. But it's just interesting that the Acts and the Day of Pentecost is something I thought about when I heard him talk about what they're aiming for with these translators. And I really don't think that they need for metaverse or whatever it's eventually called to be perfect. They just need it to be good enough where people will embrace it and begin to use it and spend as much more and more time in there. And, of course, young people in particular, as I already stated, are used to this type of interaction anyway. Most of their day is spent online. And many can, unfortunately, can barely function socially in the real world as is. You know, after many decades of social engineering, people may be more ready than we realize for this type of thing. Because I was even in the gym the other day, and people are supposed to be working out, but I saw a lot of people just sitting on the machines and looking at their phones and doing stuff online rather than actually doing any real exercise. And so we're already seeing how we're glued to our machines. So next we're going to look at some tech. And recently, Mark Zuckerberg, they had a MetaConnect conference where they revealed some of their new technology and the things they're talking about. And some of that was mentioned in this video, but I at least wanted to look at this conference so you can hear some of the products, hardware that's coming out to enhance the metaverse experience.
Welcome to Connect. We are incredibly proud to introduce Quest 3, the first mainstream mixed reality headset. Quest 3 is the most powerful headset that we have ever shipped, and it allows you to blend the physical and digital worlds together. You can navigate it with just your hands if you want, and the hand tracking is getting really good, or with these brand new precision controllers that we've designed for games or work or things where you want some extra precision. And, you know, of course, it's completely standalone. No wires, no battery pack, you know, nothing like that that's going to break your sense of presence. So when you put on Quest 3, you see the physical room around you. Only now it is a canvas that you can bring your digital objects into the world.
And just Quest 3 is the latest iteration of the headsets that you wear in the virtual world.
You know, Quest 3, it understands your space, so you can play with the world around you. You can solve Lego puzzles, or you can build your own creations on any flat surface in your room. You can play games like BAM with your friends sitting around a table, whether you're physically right there together, or even if they're far away. You know, people love working out in Quest. But now, if you're doing a body combat workout, the targets are going to come at you in your physical room, whether you're in your living room or if you're in your home gym. You're be able to look around and see the room around you, so you're going to be a lot more comfortable, you know, swinging your arms and moving your body. Now, these experiences are possible because Quest 3 shows your physical space with 10 times more pixels than what we had on Quest 2. And it automatically maps the space that you're in using two dedicated color camera sensors and a depth sensor, which makes it so that if you pick up a digital ball and throw it at the physical wall, it'll bounce off it. Now, this also means that you're going to be able to take a big virtual screen and just drop it wherever you are, and it will show up in your physical room. And this is going to unlock a lot of awesome experiences for hanging out with people, watching content, and even if they're not there with you. Now, one thing that I'm pretty excited to share today is that Xbox Cloud Gaming is coming to Quest in December. And next year, we're launching something that we call Augments, which are basically persistent, spatially anchored digital objects that you can interact with. So, you know, you can put a frame on your wall with photos and videos from Facebook and Instagram. You can put a digital portal next to your physical workout gear, so every time you walk by it, you can easily jump into a supernatural workout. It is the most powerful headset yet with the next generation processor, better displays and optics, it's 40% thinner, a lot more comfortable, and it comes with the great new precision controllers or the awesome hand tracking that has just gotten a lot better. You know, end to end, we have designed this thing and optimized it, the hardware stack, the software stack, so it can deliver amazing mixed reality and the world's best immersive content library. So there it is. Yeah. All right, Quest 3, it is shipping on August 10th. You can order it today for $499. So we are building a platform for creating AIs that can help you get things done or just have fun. And, you know, the way this is going to work is people are going to be able to interact with these AIs across the whole meta universe of products. So, you know, of course, you'll be able to chat with them in WhatsApp and Messenger and Instagram Direct, but beyond that, they're going to have profiles in Instagram and Facebook, and you'll be able to interact with them, and eventually they're going to be embodied as avatars and live and be able to interact with them in the metaverse too. And we're going to open this platform up for developers and more use cases soon. I'm really looking forward to seeing what all of you build. But even before that, we've been creating a bunch of AIs ourselves, and we're going to start rolling these out in beta.
I'll just say, while they've got the commercials on, it's like, why do we even need all this stuff to interact with people? We can go visit them if it's people that live near us. We've got phones. We've got video cameras even where we can video chat with people if we want to do it that way. So why do we need this immersive world to go into? That's a question I've been asking. What is this even? Why is it necessary?
Camping that a bit over the next couple of days. So let's meet some of them. All right, first up, we got Meta AI. Meta AI is your basic assistant, right? That you can talk to like a person, right? You can message Meta AI and any of the messaging apps, WhatsApp, Messenger, Instagram Direct. Soon you're gonna be able to message it in Quest 3, and it's gonna help you answer, you know, your basic questions or requests. Let's check this out. So let's say you're planning dinner. You got Max the sous chef, who can help you come up with a recipe and help you come up with ideas. You know, so if you want to find a way to sneak some broccoli into your kid's dinner, Max has got you. You know, let's say you add too much salt to the recipe, he can help you balance it out. All right. Or let's say, you know, you're writing something like a keynote, and you're not really sure where to get started, you can ask Lily, or personal editor AI, who can help you brainstorm and share tips, or you can give her a bunch of the text that you've written, and she can help you edit it and make it better. Or maybe you're traveling and you're trying to plan a road trip with your kids. You've got Lorena, who's going to be able to help you find the best barbecue on the road trip, or find a good national park or a beautiful spot to take the kids. Let's say you want to play a role-playing game. Well, now you can just drop the Dungeon Master into one of your chats, and let's check this guy out.
Let's get medieval, player.
I mean, who hasn't wanted to play a text, you know, adventure game with Snoop Dogg? We're also very focused on on giving all of you the ability to build AIs too. So we've been creating something that we call AI Studio. And it is a platform for building these kind of AIs. And we're starting by opening up the API for integrating into our messaging apps to start. And that's going to open in the coming weeks. We are also building a sandbox so that, you know, people who don't code can also train AIs like this. And we're working on that and iterating on it. And we hope to have that out sometime early next year. And we're also working on bringing all of this to the metaverse too, where you're going to be able to have these AIs will be able to be embodied as avatars. You'll be able to make them as NPCs in the different games and experiences that you build and all the different Horizon worlds. And I think that that's going to be really neat. So that brings me to the last thing that I want to show you today, which is the next generation of Ray-Ban Meta smart glasses. Now, these are designed so you can stay in the moment and stay connected without having to take your phone out. You can capture what's going on around you. You can share with your friends in the world. Everything about this is upgraded from the first version. The cameras are a lot better, so the images and videos that you capture are a lot clearer. The audio is a lot better, so when you're listening to music or podcasts or taking calls, that's a lot better. They're lighter, they're more comfortable, and there are a lot more styles, too. But the most interesting thing about this isn't any of those specs. It's that these are the first smart glasses that are built and shipping with Meta AI in them. So starting in the U.S., you're going to get this state-of-the-art AI that you can interact with hands-free wherever you go. So, you know, let's say you're grilling with your family and you want to know how long you need to be cooking that chicken for, you know, or you're playing pickleball and hits the line and you want to know if that's a fault. She disagrees, but you know the truth. Or let's say you just want to settle a debate, you know, some trivia as you're going out through the world. Just ask your Ray-Ban Meta glasses, and they'll respond and get you the answer. You are going to be able to live stream to your friends and followers from your glasses. All right, these Ray-Ban Meta smart glasses, we're launching them on October 17th. Starting at $299, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what you all think of them. As always, it is an honor to be on this journey building this with you. Thank you all for coming out to Connect, and now I'm going to hand it over to our Chief Technology Officer, Boz. Thank
you. All right, and I didn't mention it earlier that this video was uploaded about a month ago, and so this was done very recently, this Meta Connect reveal. So it just some interesting stuff, particularly about these AI chatbots that you can ask things. It's like they're treating this stuff like the Oracle of Delphi. It's your muse, it's your advisor, personal assistant, everything you need. You don't even have to think about it. And it sounds cool. It's easy. It's convenient. It makes it easier for us. And who doesn't like easier and convenient? But at what cost? You know, what is it that they're reeling us into? What are they herding us toward by introducing this stuff as something that's helpful to us in anything we would need in the real world as well as the metaverse? I mean, good grief. You barbecuing chicken, you cook the chicken till it's not pink in the middle anymore. May have to cut it a little bit to see, but my goodness, is it really that hard? Why do we even need this stuff? That's something I'm asking. And they also, another thing we're going to look at, they talked about being immersive and being able to feel sensations and different things in the metaverse, and there's gear that you can buy or that they're developing that will allow us to do that. We're going to listen to this one thing that they have, which is a full body suit that you can wear, and you'll feel things when it's something, you're being shot with something, you'll feel that or touched in some way. And they've also have gloves too, but this in particular is a suit, and it's by Tesla. So let's listen to this. This was put out like a few years ago, so they've probably farther along in developing it at this point.
I'll
show
the camera.
Okay.
I'm
gonna shot myself in the face.
You're probably wondering why I'm trying to hit myself in the face. Trust me, I'm not doing it on purpose. I'm wearing a completely wireless, full-body haptic suit called the Tesla suit. So what does it do? First of all, it's nothing to do with Tesla Motors. It's actually a two-piece suit that uses electro-stimulation systems to create sensations on the skin or cause muscle contractions, like when I hold my arm out and it comes flying back towards me involuntarily.
See, we can actually manipulate the muscles.
I didn't do that. The Tesla suit has 68 haptic points on the body, so I can feel the force of playing a game in VR or train my muscles to learn poses.
So am I going to feel like, am I going to get home and I'm going to be bruised from the experience?
You will never get bruised.
Okay.
It's exactly, we're affecting the actual muscle. We're not creating a punch per se.
Mm-hmm.
We're affecting the muscle so it contracts naturally. So everything this suit does is a natural body's reaction anyway to the brain's signals. We just reverse that, so reverse engineer that basically, and we're applying that to our bodies. So the brain understands that something is going on, and it's natural. So basically, it's exactly the same as in real world.
Before I try a demo in virtual reality, I get to feel what the sensations are like in isolation.
Very light in my right arm. Oh, it's going all over my belly. And my arms, I can feel it. Oh! Oh, it feels like someone was like shocking my arm.
Tell me when to stop.
This is fun. Oh. Okay.
One more.
Oh. Okay. That was intense. Was that the strongest?
That's not the strongest.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I'm ready. I'm ready. Oh. Did I feel that? I like jumped out of my skin. Oh wow.
So,
it's making me laugh. I don't know if that's the desired effect, but that's. Wow, that's uncanny. So if I was like to hold my leg limp like this, could you get it to kick?
Let's try.
A little. It just feels strange. It's testing my balance too, which is
How does it feel?
It feels like torture.
Right.
Now it's time to combine the Tesla suit with a VR headset. I'm interacting with a range of objects in this room and feeling what it's like to hold, throw, or get shocked by them.
How does that feel?
This feels very interesting. It feels like sensations running across my wrist and then a little bit on my bicep, like
right.
Pins and needles. Oh, it just exploded. Oh, this
you
is
can...
a fan.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Do you
so
feel
I,
that?
I put my arm out and it feels like it's getting the sensation from the fan. Wow. And I can kind of see my virtual arm too. Yeah. So it's not super strong. Oh, ow. The closer I get, it's actually pretty strong.
If you pull the arm up and down, that's your different powers.
So this is adjusting the intensity of the sensation
yep.
that I'm
yep.
going to feel.
So if you play the music, I'm going to adjust that.
All right. I'm going to play the music. And then I'm feeling the beat. I'm feeling the vibration. Okay. I'm going to increase the intensity. Oh, no, it's too much. All
yeah.
right. I can choose the sensation.
You can
light
play
wind
them.
Or light. Oh, I can play the sensation.
Yeah.
Light wind or light rain. Okay.
Just scroll down. You've got the middle arrow
yeah.
there.
Light snow.
There's loads of sensations there. So you
normal
can...
touch. Normal massage. Okay. Now we're talking. All right. Here we go. Oh, it feels like Oh, it feels like I'm in one of those massage chairs. Oh, that was cool. That was quite relaxing, actually. Okay. Hard front kick. Here goes nothing. Oh, okay. It wasn't that hard, but I did feel it right here. Hard explosion. Oh, do I really want to try? Yes, I do. Oh, I just did that to myself. What is wrong with me?
The Tesla suit isn't available to buy just yet. The company is working with B2B gaming and production houses like Sony Pictures Television. And if you're thinking it might have another use case, you're right. The adult industry is also on the list.
So that was my experience wearing the Tesla suit. Thanks so much for watching Beta Test. Make sure to give the video a thumbs up.
So that's this full body suit that they're developing and maybe more advanced now to be able to feel everything that's going on in the virtual world. And I've seen where they have gloves as well. So this is very interesting how they're gearing up to make this like just like being in the real world. So one thing we're going to look at is the podcast they talked about with Mark Zuckerberg and Lex Friedman. We're going to look at that, couple portions from it, and just listen to some of the things that they're saying as it relates to the nature of reality and what they think is the future of humanity in general. So we're going to listen to these snippets once we get to it. And some of this stuff, it sounds fun and interesting, but I'm just skeptical. That's all I'm going to say. I think we can look at it with a more critical eye. Just to make sure, because we know that we're being groomed for things and pushed into things and programmed. So we just have to keep that in mind as we look at this technology. And excuse me if you hear my dog barking in the background. Someone just walked by the house out here. They got roofers next door. So we're going to get into this video, and we'll start it with the nature of reality and what they have to say about that.
I'm already forgetting that you're not real. Like, this really, so
well,
it's
I am
novel.
This is just an avatar version of me. But
it's a deep philosophical question, yes.
But here's some of the, so I put this on this morning, and I was like, all right, like, it's like, okay, so this, my hair is a little shorter in this than my physical hair is right now. I probably need to go get a haircut.
Sure.
I did happen to shave this morning, but if I hadn't, you know, I could still have this photorealistic avatar that is more cleanly shaven, right, that even if I'm, you know, a few days in physically. So I do think that there are going to start to be these subtle questions that seep in where the avatar is realistic in the sense of this is kind of what you looked like at the time of capture, but it's not necessarily temporally accurate to exactly what you look like in this moment. And I know there are going to end up being a bunch of questions that come from that over time that I think are going to be fascinating too.
You mean just like the nature of identity of who we are? Are we the people, you know how people do like summer beach body, would people be, for the scan, they'll try to lose some weight and look their best and sexiest with the nice hair and everything like that. I mean, it does raise the question of, you know, if a lot of people are interacting with the digital version of ourselves, who are we really? Are we the entity driving the avatar, or are we the avatar?
Well, I mean, I think our physical bodies also fluctuate and change over time too, so I think there's a similar question of like, which version of that are we, right? There's like the,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
it's interesting identity question because, all right, it's like, I don't know, it's like weight fluctuates or things like that. It's like, I think most people don't tend to think of themselves as the, Well, I don't know. It's an interesting psychological question. Maybe a lot of people do think about themselves as the kind of worst version. But I think a lot of people probably think about themselves as the best version.
And I just wanted to say, before we go further, is that these images of these two guys are pretty good, realistic versions of them, not cartoonish at all, but like we stated earlier, they went through an extensive, arduous scanning process for this to be able to happen. I mean, you can see the 5 o'clock shadow, you can see freckles, and they're placed, the freckles are placed exactly where they are on the guy's face for real, so it's very realistic how these things are looking, and they're sitting here next to each other in the metaverse.
Yeah. And then it's like what you are on a day-to-day basis doesn't necessarily map to either of those. There will definitely be a bunch of social scientists and folks will have to, you know, and psychologists there's going to be a lot to understand about how our perception of ourselves and others has shifted from this.
Well, this might be a bit of a complicated and a dark question, but one of the first feelings I had experiencing this is I would love to talk to loved ones. And the next question I have is I would love to talk to people who are no longer here that are loved ones. So, like, if you look into the future, is that something you think about, who people will pass away, but they can still exist in the metaverse? You can still have, you know, talk to your father, talk to your grandfather and grandmother and mother once they pass away. The power of that experience is one of the first things my mind jumped to, because it's like, this is so real.
Yeah, I think that there are a lot of norms and things that people have to figure out around that. There's probably some balance where, you know, someone has lost a loved one and is grieving, there may be ways in which, you know, being able to interact or relive certain memories could be helpful, but then there's also probably an extent to which it could become unhealthy. And I mean, I'm not an expert in that, so I think we'd have to study that and understand it in more detail. We have, you know, a fair amount of experience with how to handle death and identity and people's digital content through social media already, unfortunately, right? Where people who use our services die every day, and their families, you know, often want to have access to their profiles, and we have whole protocols that we go through where, you know, there are certain parts of it that that we try to memorialize, so that way the family can get access to it, so that way the account doesn't just go away immediately. But then there are other things that are, you know, important kind of private things that that person has, like we're not going to give the family access to someone's messages, you know, for example. So I think that there's some best practices, I think, from the current digital world that will carry over. But I think that this will enable some different things. Another version of this is.
Okay. I wanted to listen to that part about the nature of reality and how these things here, these avatars, look so real, how they would even redefine reality and what's real and what isn't. And we'll get into that a little bit later, as far as if you think it's real, then it's real type of conversation. But when he talked about, Lex asked the question about communicating with the dead, I immediately thought about, well, how would God see that? Because even though it's supposedly this digital representation of your dead relative or whoever it is, how would God look at it? And my mind immediately went to Deuteronomy 18, where he talks about communication with the dead and strict prohibitions against it. In verses 9 through 12, and since it's a digital image, does that mean it would be okay to do it? I don't know. It's just something to think about, so I thought I would throw that out there. And plus, it probably would be unhealthy especially if someone is struggling with accepting the death of someone they love, and they can just go hang out in the metaverse, would they ever really be able to get to a place where they can, as they rely on God to get them through their grief and that grief process, would they ever be able to make any progress if they don't ever have to acknowledge the death of a person, because you can go hang out with them in the virtual world? So how would that cripple us in our grieving process and even relying on God to help us with that? You know, why cast our cares on him and look to him to help us when we can just go pretend that they're still alive in some virtual world? So those are some things I thought about when he said that. And the next piece we'll listen to is their part. They're talking about the future of humanity.
Well, we're talking about AI, but I'm still blown away this entire time that I'm talking to Mark Zuckerberg, and you're not here, but you feel like you're here. I've done quite a few intimate conversations with people alone in a room, and this feels like that. So I keep forgetting for long stretches of time that, like, we're not in the same room. And for me to imagine a future where I can, with a snap of a finger, do that with anyone in my life, the way we can just call right now and have this kind of shallow 2D experience, to have this experience like we're sitting next to each other, is like, I don't think we can even imagine how that changes things, where you can immediately have intimate one-on-one conversations with anyone. That might, like, in a way we might not even predict, change civilization.
Well, I mean, this is a lot of the thesis behind the whole metaverse, is giving people the ability to feel like you're present with someone. I mean, this is like the main thing I talk about all the time. But I do think that there's a lot to process about it. I mean, from my perspective, I mean, I'm definitely here. We're not physically in the same place. It's not like you're not talking to an AI, right? I think the thing that's novel is the ability to convey through technology a sense of almost physical presence. So the thing that is not physically real is us being in the same physical place, but kind of everything else is. And I think that gets to this somewhat philosophical question about what is the nature of kind of the modern real world. And I just think that's really is this combination of a physical world and the presence that we feel, but also being able to combine that with this increasingly rich and powerful and capable digital world that we have, and all of the innovation that's getting created there. So I think it's super exciting, because, I mean, the digital world is just increasing in its capability and our ability to do awesome things, but the physical world is so profound, and that's a lot of what makes us human, is that we're physical beings. So I don't think we want to run away from that and just spend all day on a screen. And that's, like, you know, it's one of the reasons why I care so much about helping to shape and accelerate these future computing platforms. I just think this is so powerful. And it's, you know, even though the current version of this is like you're wearing a headset, I just think this is going to be by far the most human and social computing platform that has ever existed. And that's what makes me excited.
Yeah, I think just to linger on this kind of changing nature of reality, like of what is real, maybe shifting it towards the sort of consciousness. So what is real is the subjective experience of a thing that makes it feel real versus necessarily being in the same physical space. Because it feels like we're in the same physical space.
Yeah.
And that it's the conscious experience of it, that's probably what is real, not like that the space-time, like the physics of it, like you're basically breaking physics and focusing on the consciousness. That's what's real. Just whatever's going on inside my head.
But there are a lot of social and psychological things that go along with that experience that was previously only physical presence, right? I think that there's like an intimacy, a trust. You know, there's a level of communication, because so much of communication is nonverbal and it's based on expressions, that you're kind of
you know, you're sharing with someone when you're in this kind of environment. And before, those things would have only been possible, you know, had, you know, I gotten on a plane and flown to Austin and sat, you know, physically with you in the same place. So I think we're basically shortcutting those laws of physics and delivering the social and psychological benefits of being able to be present and feel like you're there with another person, which have good real benefits to anyone in the world. And I think that, like you said, I mean, I think that is going to be a very profound thing. And that a lot of that is, you know, that's the promise of the metaverse and what, you know, why, you know, I think that that's the next frontier for what we're working on. You know, I started working on social networks when they were primarily text. For the first version of Facebook, your profile, you know, you had one photo and the rest of it was like lists of things that you were interested in. And then we kind of went through the period where we were doing photos, and you know, now we're kind of in the period where most of the content is video. But there's a clear trend where, you know, over time, the way that we want to express ourselves and kind of get insight and content about the world around us gets increasingly just richer and more vivid. And I think the ability to be immersed and feel present with the people around you or the people who you care about is, from my perspective, clearly the next frontier. It just so happens that it's incredibly technologically difficult, right? It requires building up these new computing platforms and completely new software stacks to deliver that. But I mean, I kind of feel like that's what we're here to do as a company.
Well, I really love the connection you have through conversation. And so for me, this photorealism is really, really exciting. I'm really excited for this future. And thank you for building it. Thanks to you and thanks to the amazing Meta teams that I've met, the engineers and just everybody I've met here. Thank you for helping to build this future. And thank you, Mark, for talking to me inside the metaverse. This is blowing my mind. I can't quite express. I would love to measure my heart rate this whole time. It would be hilarious if you're actually like sitting on a beach right now.
I'm not. I'm in a conference room.
Okay, well, I'm on a beach and not wearing any pants. So I'm really sorry about that for anyone else who's watching me in physical space. Anyway, thank you so much for talking today. This really blew my mind. It's one of the most incredible experiences of my life, so thank you for giving that to me.
Awesome.
All right, and that last little piece where they're talking about redefining reality and going from objective reality to subjective reality, which is based on relativism, how you think, how you feel. He said, because this feels real, it is real. That's what Lex was saying in that piece of the conversation. So we're seeing that even in real time with a lot of these movements and these subjective identities that people assume based on how they feel. If a man feels like a woman and vice versa, then they are whatever it is they feel. So this metaverse, this realistic renderings of these avatars, it can produce the same thing. You're getting into more of a philosophical territory as they were speaking about this. Objective reality, which is the real world that God created, and what you feel. And while God gave us our emotions for a purpose, they're not things that we should really trust in to define what reality is or to determine what God would have us to do. You know, you hear follow your heart all the time when it comes down to certain things. But before when we talk about reality, my mind went back to, of course, Genesis and the creation. But I also want to read John 1:1-2 as far as objective reality and what God created. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. In verse 3, all things were made through him, and without him nothing was made that was made. In him was life, and life was the light of men. So the Lord created a real world for us to live in, and he created us to interact in that world. But now they're moving us over to a digital world where everything is even more subjective, and until than it is here in the real world. It's a transformation that they're working towards. But just some scripture on the heart. You know, of course, we know Jeremiah 17:9, what it says about the heart and why it's not reliable, because it's wicked and desperately wicked. It describes in that verse, and Jesus talks about it in Matthew 15:19-21 as far as what comes out of a man that defiles him, and he's talking about the things that come out of the heart in those verses. And according to the Bible, the heart encompasses our mind, will, or center of being, where our thoughts, emotions, desires, and feelings come from. And so that's why our all of that has to be submitted to the Lord, submitted to the Holy Spirit, because it is debased. And Romans talks about it as well, you know, as far as the carnal mind and how it's an enmity against God, and how it, and but to be spiritually minded is in life and peace. So I found that part of the conversation interesting, and in what they're moving us to in this metaverse, and some of the implications of that. And it's almost my time, and I wanted to play this little gospel message here. And thank you so much for listening. Have a great rest of your day and week.
What we do in the midst of this sin-sick age that has rejected the gospel and perverted the gospel and replaced the gospel with that which is not the gospel. That we call out that wickedness. We call it by name. And we remind people of the good news of the gospel again and again and again until it tastes sweet to them. When people say, no, our problem is this, our problem is that, we say, no, our problem is that God created the world. And God created man, and he put man in the garden to keep the garden, and he gave the man a command. And he held that man to perfect, perpetual obedience to that command, and he promised him life if he kept it, and death if he didn't. And he didn't keep it. He ate. And because he ate, because of that one man, sin entered the world, and death through sin. And everyone born from that man through ordinary generation inherited that man's sin nature. And because of that sin nature, sins proceed from it. And our world is broken because of that sin. And we stand guilty before a holy and righteous God. And we know that he's holy, and we know that he's righteous, and we crave justice. But the problem is that if God gives us justice, we all die. And so that God, in his goodness and in his mercy, sent forth his son, who was not born of ordinary generation, but was born of a virgin. Yes, the virgin birth matters. Why? Because if he's born of ordinary generation, he's born in sin. But because he's not born of ordinary generation, he's not born in sin. He's clean of sin. His record is clean. And he keeps his record clean. And he obeys God's law. And because he's fully God and fully man, he obeys the law of God on our behalf in his active obedience. And then in his passive obedience, God made him who knew no sin to be sin for us. All we like sheep had gone astray. Each of us had turned to his own way, but God laid upon him the iniquity of us all. And Christ died for sin once for all, the just for the unjust. And God imputes our sinfulness to him. And he nails our sinfulness to the tree. and Christ dies and raises again on the third day for our justification. And there's another imputation. The righteousness of Christ is actually imputed to us so that God can be both just and the justifier of the one who places faith in Jesus Christ, so that all those who come to Christ may enter in, so that all those who place faith in Christ might be saved, but not only saved, but sanctified, because he's the firstborn of many brethren. We're justified and we're adopted into the family of God, and we're sanctified, and as his children we begin to bear the family resemblance, and we're further sanctified throughout this life by the very same gospel that saves us, until one day when it's all said and done, we're not just saved from the penalty of sin, we're not just saved from the power of sin, but one day we're glorified and saved from the very presence of sin. That's the gospel that we preach. That's the gospel that we need. And that's the gospel that's more than enough.